Hey everybody, quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Joanne Larrabee. This is one of these episodes where I could just kind of sit back and go, fuck, that makes so much sense why you're so successful in the things that you do, because this is the way that your mindset works and this is the way that you think. I've known Joanne for years, as we talk about in this podcast. We met back in 2014, I think it was in 2014 we first met, when Joanne was going out with a then client of mine when I used to work one-to-one as a personal trainer, and we kind of met through him and we kind of remained friends since. And we've been talking about doing this podcast for ages, but because of Joanne's schedule, she's so busy, like the absolute epitome of successful businesswoman, trying to coordinate a day where we could overlap both podcasts, because I came on her new podcast, The Other Side of Perfect. The title of that episode is Brian Keene Talks Motivation, Productivity, Turning Insecurities into Strength and Body Dysmorphia, which I will link in the description of today's episode. So I would highly recommend checking that out after this episode. That's one of my favorite interviews, that I've ever done. Joanne has an amazing ability to probe and ask very well-worded questions that bring out the best in the person that she's interviewing. I think she's going to be a massive success in podcasting, so be sure to go and subscribe to her new podcast if you haven't already. In today's episode then, for those of you unfamiliar with Joanne, Joanne is a plus-size model, best-selling author, and businesswoman. And today's episode is very, very heavy on the mindset side of things, particularly about halfway through. We start delving into a range of different topics, from plus-size modeling and how that came about, to going into the world of potentially competing in a bikini show, having been a plus-size model, and how her image of herself and her body image was skewed as she got leaner, and how she had to put tools, techniques, and tips and practices in place in order to accept her body. So if you've ever struggled with body confidence, I think you're going to get so much from this episode from Joanne, who's been on both sides of the extreme, where she loved herself as a plus size model, walking around with a little bit of extra weight, and then how that dropped off and became more of an issue the leaner she got. Just such an interesting dynamic from her starting point to her finish point to where she is right now. Absolutely love it. The mindset side of things, again, you can't, from my experience, you can't talk to somebody as successful as Joanne without understanding that what it takes to build a kind of bulletproof mindset to allow you to achieve great things, you have to learn from mistakes. You have to learn from failures. You have to be able to accept all of that as feedback to move forward and to just keep striving to become the best version of yourself. Oh, I fucking love this episode. Like, I was recording it with Joanne and I'm like, oh, this is so good. So hopefully you can all hear it okay. We had a little bit of sound issues about three quarters of the way through. But without further ado, today's episode with my guest and friend, Joanne Larrabee, on plus size modeling, accepting your body, and building a walled mindset. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm so excited to be joined by my guest today. We've been dying to do this for ages, Joanne. Joanne Larrabee, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. I think I was looking back in our messages, it was last year, and we were trying to get this kind of going, so I'm really, really glad.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was. It was literally a year ago.
Yeah,
I was
a year ago.
Let's do a podcast.
And we talked back and forth, and it was just our schedules were just mixing up, and and now we're back to back.
Yeah,
all the podcasts.
For everybody listening, I'm coming on your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Tell everybody a little bit about that before we get into your background, about the new podcast, where they can listen, because we'll be plugging it at the end as well, but definitely check it out now too.
Yeah, perfect. So it's called The Other Side of Perfect, and it is essentially, I suppose, my space to get my voice out there on a myriad of different topics that mean more to me than what my captions and curated kind of content on Instagram would put across and portray. So depth-filled topics, the nitty-gritty side of the industry, interviewing entrepreneurs and not just the perfected side of what they do and what they kind of put online out there in their polished version of content, more so the strife, the struggle, the reality of life and the other side of business and personal relationships, mental health, everything. So the depth filled topics.
I love it. And for everybody that's listening that may not be familiar with you or that isn't following, you should definitely go follow like directly after this podcast.
I pay him.
Yeah. But tell everyone a little bit about your background, what you do, and just a little bit about your story.
So my story started, I suppose, I'm going to start quickly from college. I always would have been very artistic, so I knew I wanted to go into some area of creativity. And my background would be, I was going to toy between fashion design and makeup artistry, went down the makeup artistry route purely to get into the working world quicker. And I worked in retail for 3 to 4 years on counter, different positions. I did a couple of different makeup brands and realized that I hated the sell side of things. It wasn't for me. I was decent at it, but it was the creative side and the artistry side that I loved. So kind of wanted to go freelance without making it my full-time commitment. So I would be someone who would want that stability with my hobby earning money as well. So I wanted to get kind of a base career 9 to 5 and then be able to play around with the makeup artistry outside of that. So I ended up doing Montessori and special needs. And it's interesting because I was listening to your recent podcast with Sarah Godfrey. That's her background as well.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people from my followers have quite a similar path where the creative, emotional kind of right side of the brain actually ends up doing both of those careers in some sense. So yeah, Montessori and special needs, would have worked in a school in Clontarf for about 3 years full time. And I nannied for 2 different families whilst running essentially my makeup artistry freelance. And during that time, I wanted to, I suppose, propel my freelance career, but also be known for things outside of just the makeup side of it. And that's when I started a blog. Blogging wasn't that big. We're talking 7 years ago now. I'm an oldie in the blogging career anyway. And I remember getting Donal Skehan. I'm sure you know him. He's a good friend of mine. And I remember him setting up my .com, my joannelarby.com, and basically saying you should do this X, Y, and Z, and having no clue how to start essentially a blog. But he's like, you'll use this later, I promise. And, you know, kind of getting set up with WordPress and things like that and just being a total noob. And I nerded out and I looked up how to gain a social media following. And every single evening that I would come home from teaching, I literally just was enthralled. I would blog about anything and everything from plus size clothing, which essentially I've always been curvy. So that was kind of my niche. So I would do little photos against my garden wall. Poor ex at the time taking them on the phone and showcase my sense of style. Do my makeup looks and tutorials and I suppose feed my non-existent following with information to do with the beauty, fashion, lifestyle realm. And at that point, I did start to gain a following, as it happens. It wasn't my end goal. It was more so, I suppose, to utilize my passion and grow my makeup artistry career. But also I had a passion for writing and journalism. So I always think I wanted to kind of explore that a little bit. And when I was teaching, I didn't want to lose that side. I didn't want to just let it slide. So I kind of did both for about 2.5 years. So I was teaching kind of till 4 o'clock, nannying in the evening, writing the blog posts in the kind of nighttime and then doing makeup lessons and tutorials and weddings at the weekend. The blog started to take off and I actually got signed with Assets as a plus size model, started to do a lot of Ireland AM. And I did everything from modeling underwear to normal clothes and loved that side of things. But it was quite tricky because I felt like I was living 2 different lives. I was coming into school with glitter and glue in my hair. And then going into Ireland AM being super glam and the parents were spotting me on TV and be like, I think I saw you on Ireland AM this morning. And I was like, no, you definitely didn't. You know, they're collecting their kids and I'm really awkward about being their teacher and going into teacher mode. And so there was this awkward phase for a while where I was definitely doing both. And I kind of was able to run it until I couldn't run it anymore. So every single element started to take off a bit. School got busier and then my makeup artistry clients got bigger as a result of the blog growing. Which in turn kind of, I suppose, when a following grows, your name grows and then you get more bookings and then everything just domino effects. So it all kind of hit nicely off each other. And through the modeling, I started to do styling and through styling, I started to do a bit of hair, a bit of makeup here. So instead of being booked as a sole MUA, I was being known for kind of a one-stop shop. So it was actually cheaper to book me to do the photos for someone, editing the photos, doing their hair, doing their makeup and whatever. So I was being, I suppose, exploring areas that I wasn't necessarily qualified in, but just winging it.
Yeah.
And I would be doing a wedding for someone, but I would do their photos as well as the editing and the hair and the makeup. And so it was throwing myself in at the deep end, but realizing that I loved it and that there was a career opportunity here. So fast forward to The following growing brands started to contact me in the way that we see hashtag ad nowadays. Yeah. It didn't exist back then, kind of pre-ASAI standards. We very much were just found on Google, a highly ranking blog and someone who was doing decent in their area. And I remember my first pure package was a deodorant, Sure deodorant. I was over the moon. How the hell did they find me? I've been sent deodorant. I am winning at life. And then it just kind of, it took off from there, where I started to work with a lot more brands. And with that, I thought, how am I going to make this a business and kind of refine it? Because I was just doing a little bit of everything. And I was a bit tired as well, because I was kind of just doing both jobs and I needed to make a decision. So spoke to my boss in the school and she said, look, you're always going to have your qualifications for teaching. You can head back. Give this a go. This is your shot. She was super sound, really understandable, and gave me the kind of kick and I suppose the confidence that I needed to go out on my own. Got the blog revamped, got a proper website done up, really took care of my social media. And then fast forward to doing masterclass, I started to do some work with Inglot. Yeah. So touring masterclasses, bringing my following to those classes. They had a small entry fee redeemable against product. They got to meet me. They got to see about the brand and I would do a few different looks, maybe Halloween based. I would do that in Dublin stores and Limerick twice a month. So I was kind of starting to get a taste for being on the road. And from that, I devised my own social media seminar, literally from a PDF on my laptop at home, of how exactly I had grown my following and the steps I've just told you there in a more professional PDF, essentially. And did a little PowerPoint course for people who wanted to get into social media and keep up to date with their company. And then from that, I was employed by a company called Salon Shop in Cork, and it's essentially a retail development. And they got me in from 11 to 5 every Monday in Cork to do an upskilling course for beauty industry professionals and therapists that wanted to get back into the working world, but had kind of lost that gap of social media.
Yeah.
So I would do, you know, how to build a portfolio, how to gain contacts and network in the industry, how to take photos well and utilize social media. And it was just an all round course to just essentially get them back into the working world of that area. And from that, I suppose I started to get a little bit recognized with what I was doing and awards and more of a following. And that's when I decided I wanted to write a book. I put together kind of those PDFs and those personal stories and started to just do a little summary. And I met a publisher who, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The lovely John, who's not with us anymore. And I got his contact from, I think it was actually Suzanne Jackson had written her book with him. And I knew that this was a very niche industry and blogging was still very new in Ireland. And so I felt like he was the person to go to, because if he had kind of had a little taste of what it was like, he would understand. Brought a summary, bought a kind of the chapters and said, do you have any space for me? And it was, I think it was like the August. And he said, nope, I've got no space. Lovely yeah. story.
What
lovely
year
man.
Was this? This was, must have been 2015.
I think 15. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he was a super lovely man. Got a really warm feel from him. And I just thought, God damn it, I've come too late.
Yeah.
But, you know, I put my little signals out to the universe. I said, I'm not leaving this lie. I've got this ready. So I rang him up and I said, look, it was so nice to meet you. What if I give you, you know, a few chapters already written and you just get a space? And he rang me up 2 days later and a politic had pulled out from some release. Yeah. He said, if you can get this over the line the next 2.5 months, we'll get it out for Christmas. It's a tall feat. Give it a go. I said, you give me my advance. Yeah. I'll do it. That's no worries. Yeah. And we did it and we did the book tour. And I actually remember, because I think the first time that I ever met you was in Galway City Gym.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. That was 14. It must have been a year, because we met that Christmas. Your
yes.
book came out as well.
Exactly. So I was briefly dating a client of yours.
Yeah.
And I remember going in there, training to Galway City Gym, meeting you. And then the second time, my second visual memory of meeting you was when you were about to meet John
yeah.
in a hotel when I was on my book tour. Yeah. You got a nice little crossover. So that was that. Book came out, did really well. And after the book, I wanted to dabble with product. I knew I'd kind of met a lot of my audience through the book and through kind of meeting them in person, which was lovely, because a lot of our work is essentially online. You're talking to people, but you don't get to talk with them in yeah. person. So after I'd done the book tour, I felt like I had a really nice rapport with my following, essentially. And that's when I dabbled with product and I brought out some vegan makeup brushes, and then I expanded the line into some lip gloss and a couple of other products. And that's pretty much where I'm at now. I work with a lot of other brands and I do advertising for them, and then I have dabbled with a couple of lines myself, and then now the podcast. So it's come full circle, but it's all in the same kind of realm.
I love it. Like, I love your story, and when I think businesswoman, straight away, it's you that jumps to mind. Just your ability to even see gaps and markets and just go straight into them. We're going to jump around on so many different topics because
we
so
already
things.
Did before this podcast. We were like, why are we not filming this?
Yeah, that was literally it. We're like, okay, let's just press record and go with it. As I said, we're going to jump around. I'm going to come back to the plus size modeling because that's something I'm really interested in, particularly because you made a brief transition away from that. Talk a little bit about the plus size modeling, what you were doing then, and then kind of your transition into fitness, where the 2-day training sessions, and just a little bit about that journey and story.
So as I mentioned, I got signed and it was kind of by fluke. So basically I had done a piece for You magazine years ago when I was blogging and I was showing essentially just my outfits and how they fit my size. And You magazine wanted to do a day in the life, a wardrobe in the life. It was a really nice kind of simple magazine entry. And people wrote in saying, do you know what? It's really nice to see a girl who's like a size 12 to 14. I've got the same size boobs as her, etc. Yeah. And it's hard to believe that now because the body positivity movement is so massive and plus size models are so accepted by brands. It actually wasn't then. So we are kind of rewinding to like 6-7 years ago. So it was quite new to see somebody with a bit of curve on TV. And Ireland AM for modeling clothes was quite big over here. So that's when I got contact with the agency. I was totally new to that. I was very comfortable with getting my own photos and I suppose controlling my own content, but this was a new area and I was definitely kind of nervous initially starting that. And then I kind of found my flow. And it's funny when I look back in retrospect, because when I see the girl that used to model for print and TV, she was super confident, like without a doubt.
At plus size.
At plus size. We're talking, I would fluctuate, I fluctuate a lot. I jump around, I literally between the 10 and 16 mark. That's kind of my bracket. Yeah. And I would level at a 12 to 14 on my comfiest where I can enjoy food and be strong and train.
Yeah.
But then depending on what's going on in my life, I go the other end. And I'd never really been thinner prior to that bar being a child, yeah. You know, so that doesn't really count. But yeah, so I would have fluctuated kind of between 12 and 16. And I mean, I'm talking standing in my ninnies in the morning, people watching their coffee or watching their coffee, drinking their coffee, watching me on TV,
watching their coffee because I'm so boring.
Yeah, eating their cornflakes and just so comfortable, you know, give us a twirl there. Fine. Not a bother. And I really embraced that plus size role. And I loved sharing that with my following because I felt like I kind of owned a bracket at the time. And it was something that I was like very pro talking about and showing clothes that would work for people like me because I'm tall as well. So I've actually got big bones.
Did you connect with that because it's something you've always been? Is that why you were able to kind of
I think it was
feel as comfortable?
Yeah, exactly. It was just being who I was. Yeah. So it was very organic. Yeah. It was, I didn't try to be a model. It just kind of happened as part of what I was doing. And so there was no airs and graces with it. There was no vanity. It was just, this is your size. We've got a little niche for you. Here's a market. Explore. And so that was fine. And that in itself created a following. And there was a lot of women who just loved that. And I mean, essentially the predominant side for a lot of Irish women is a UK 16. It obviously fluctuates. I don't know the exact statistics, but there is an audience there that really, I suppose that resonates with. And then fast forward to when I started training, and I think it probably would have been when I met you. So we're talking like 2015. And I had always been fit in terms of being sporty. So growing up, tennis, swimming, gymnastics, horse riding, you name it. I'm quite good at sport. I can pick up something and I'm decent, but I'm like a jack of all trades. I'm not really good at something. I always kind of gave up. And I noticed that even as a child, I would have started ballet and stopped at blocks, started horse riding and stopped at competing. Like I always kind of got so far and then never went over kind of that bracket. So I was like okay at stuff. And enjoyed sport. And I suppose when I kind of started training in the gym, it was again another new thing to explore and get really into. And I definitely have, it's funny, I don't have an addictive personality in terms of I don't smoke, I don't really drink, I wouldn't be addicted to a specific food type or anything like that, but and no drugs either.
Just to clarify.
But I would be addicted to when I'm doing something productive that could be an area to mess around with business.
Yeah.
There's something in me that takes over.
State nearly, like,
exactly. So exactly what you say, flow. If I'm editing, I'm in a flow and I, you know, don't interrupt me for 2 days. I could stay in a room in a hole doing something. So if there's an end goal for me, I'm obsessed and I'm an all or nothing. So it's extremities. So I guess that happened with the gym. I loved it and I loved it to the point where it became a necessity. It had to be every day or else I didn't feel great. And the more I did that, I think this is quite common with a lot of people, you look at your body a lot more and you look at it in a different way. So when I reflect back to plus size model Joanne, I think I look fine. I knew that I was happy then, so maybe it's easy to reflect and say I think I look fine. When I look back to training days, I think I look awful because I know where my head was at. Yeah. I was editing my photos more than ever. I had never edited my photos when it came to the likes of I was on TV. I couldn't edit anything. You know, I didn't have control of how I looked. I was super fine with it. And other people were taking my pictures a lot and it was fine. But when I started to kind of grow more of a following, I felt more protective of what I was putting out online. And I forgot that people were actually following me just for me. And they identified with my size. And then if you can kind of combine the two of me excessively training and going 100% at that with being a perfectionist, something went quite wrong.
Yeah.
And I think with that, it was perfectionism mixed with the obsession of training.
Because you were toyed with doing a show. This was how
in London, yeah,
how extreme it was going.
From plus size to stage. Yeah. And that's extreme.
A bikini show, for anyone unfamiliar, a bodybuilding bikini show, just to give context.
Yeah, not a horse riding show.
Yeah, yeah, well, you could do that too. But,
it's something where you're standing on a stage and you're being marked on your aesthetic alone, yeah, not your personality, not your career, nothing else. And I was ready to define myself by that. And I'm pro what anyone does. I'm not anti-bodybuilding, not anti-anything. If it works for you, that's incredible. What wasn't working for me was I was doing it for the wrong reasons. I feel as if the obsession and the mixture with business, I was like, you know, this is going to be great because the story from plus size to stage is a good one.
Yeah.
But then I kind of forgot my audience don't actually necessarily want to see that. They don't want to see me do that to my body. They can admire other fitness people doing that to their body and seeing the before and after, but maybe it's not resonating that well with them. So it was a little disconnect with that. And I remember getting a lot of messages saying, oh, I loved you when you were curvy and I feel like you're too obsessed with the gym and all of your content now is just food and fitness. We miss the old Joanne. And I was blind to it. I was just like, tunnel vision. This is what I'm doing. If you don't like it, lump it.
Yeah.
I never said that out loud to people.
But that was my dialogue. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so kind of over a span of 2 years, I went down. My smallest was an 8. Now, I didn't really hold on to that. I'm a really curvy frame.
Yeah.
And I know that's funny to say to a trainer because you're like, you can change your frame, but my bones are thick and I'm 5'10". So I was a very curvy 8 at my leanest. And that was training 45 minutes in the morning, doing Stairmaster fasted. I'd have my egg whites. I'd have my kind of 5 meals. It was the same every day. Turkey burgers and veg, my Fage yogurt and berries, a protein bar. If I was being cheeky, that was my chocolate.
Yeah.
And I loved the structure. And I loved the routine and I knew what to expect and I tracked with my fitness pal and it was like tick, tick, tick. It was kind of, I suppose, eating into the routine side of what I love. And so at the end of a working day, it would also be ticking the diet and I felt accomplished and I felt better mentally about myself that I had done all of those things. But physically, I was in an awful place because as soon as I lost weight, I started to look at my boobs and I started to think I'm someone with naturally big boobs. And the minute I dropped fat, what happens? You start to lose your boobs. Mine stayed. They just went lower and had stretch marks. And so I thought, I need to get a boob job now.
Yeah.
So I started to look at what was going to be manipulated as a result of getting to that size. Because someone who has always had big boobs, you have to take into consideration the second you lean down, they're going to change quite a lot.
Yeah.
I used to call them sandbags. I used to feel like they just changed completely. And so then I'm thinking about a boob job. And then I'm looking at all of the other things. My face got leaner, obviously. And more cheekbony. And then I thought, now my lips look too big. Things started to become distorted in my mind.
Yeah.
And if I could talk to that girl now, I would definitely say it wasn't working for me because I was unhappy. If someone is doing what I was doing and they're lean down and they want to stay that size forever and they're happy, that's amazing. But whatever was happening with me, I became more conscious of how I looked.
Why do you think that was?
I think it's just the side of me that wants to perfect things, that it's the all or nothing. So if I'm doing it, I need to do it perfectly. I need to get down to that size. I need to tick that box and I need to feel like I've achieved it. And then with that comes failure, because if you don't reach that, the next thing you're moving the the post each time. So I kept moving the post, and it wasn't that I was getting consistently leaner. I actually kind of stopped at a stage, and it was a manageable stage, but fitness was my life. And so I learned that I had to kind of accept that my body shape will get down to, say, a curvy eight. Beyond that, I need to not eat and train like three times a day, because I just wasn't changing to where I thought I needed to be to compete.
Yeah.
I was still too bulky. Like, essentially, the measurements I thought I had to get down to, I mean, I'm even heavy on the scales, as in at my lowest weight, I would have been in the 60 kilogram mark. And for some people, that's their start weight.
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking at these numbers and comparing myself to bodies that I could actually never attain. So I was setting myself up for that failure. And I feel with that came a lot of depression and a lot of negative thoughts about self-loathing and myself. And the irony of what I mentioned is I edited my photos more when I was leanest than when I was curvy, if that makes sense. So I seemed to accept myself as curvy. But once I was lean, I needed to be leaner. And I think a lot of that came as well with, I have a following now that are expecting fitness content. I need to look like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I'm not a trainer, but I have a big enough following for people to be influenced by me. If I look fat or bloated one day, they're going to be like, she's a farce. Yeah. She doesn't look fit.
Yeah.
And there was something that came with that, that was like a pressure I put on myself, where instead of accepting I can actually be 5'10" and size 14 and really strong and really healthy and fit, I have to look like fitness girls, hashtag fit fam. I had to look like that. And if I didn't, people wouldn't believe me.
Yeah.
I think that's how best to kind of explain it.
What, because the period, I understand where you went from plus size to kind of the addictive, because that's what can happen with the gym. And that's why I think your story is so important, because there's a lot of people at the end of the day, if you want to get leaner, get in shape, and I'm a trainer, that's literally what I do with people. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, 100%. But if you hate yourself at this level, mm-hmm. don't think that when you drop to a size 8, you're going to love yourself. It's like, yes, you'll be build more confidence and you might be proud. But if there's other things going on there, that's not necessarily going to fill that void. What was the catalyst, or was there a catalyst for you kind of got to a point where you're like, right, I need to go back to the way that I was. I need to focus on something else, you know, get back up to 14. Was that a gradual thing, or was it a moment? Did something happen that triggered it? What did that look like?
Yeah, so that wasn't, it's not even that there was a size in my head that I, as you exactly pointed out, you need to work on the mind before the body. And I didn't do that. And so maybe I had insecurities at size 14 that I didn't know, that I didn't address, and I kind of just accepted. And then all of a sudden it became this unraveled yarn that I needed to deal with. So I obviously realized that there was changes that needed to be made in terms of my mental health and my perception of my body, whatever size it was going to end up being. That I enjoyed sport, but I didn't need to be obsessed with it. That I enjoyed food, but I didn't need to either diet or binge. I needed to try and seek that balance. And it came around the time where I moved home from London. There was a personal scenario that was relatively negative. There was a lot going on. My dad was diagnosed with cancer at the same time. I was going through a country move, trying to find an apartment, and just a general negative stint. It was like a dark cloud kind of for about 6 months. And I went from either not eating because of feeling like crap to binge eating because I felt like crap. And then I kind of came home to Ireland and I felt the sense of release. And also a relief that I was home, that I was where I wanted to be, that I had given London a go, but that it wasn't for me. Business was better at home. My friends were at home. My family were at home. And I wanted to kind of get settled into my, essentially my new life, or revert back to it. And with that came partying with friends, enjoying time, seeing them again, not being restrictive, not having to go to the gym twice a day. And probably going the other extreme, as one does when you kind of do a big move like that. I know you've lived in London and a change. If you're not, you know, hashtag fitness, your change sometimes comes with relaxing a little bit. It just comes with, I have not really seen friends. I've not really seen family. My dad's unwell, so I want to spend more time with family. The priorities shifted and food and diet became relaxed. And with that, I just eat normally. I didn't really overeat or undereat, and I didn't overtrain or undertrain. I just dipped in and out. And funnily enough, that kind of takes us to last year. I started a new relationship in March of last year, and it took me to a very, very good place mentally. It's been the most stable and healthy relationship that I've ever had with somebody else, and also with myself. I think I went through so much the year prior online with my dad, with a breakup, that I just became a resilient fucker. I literally just became so strong that I thought, if I can deal with that, I can take anything on, genuinely. And I was
not even as low as people expected me to be. And there was a solace in that. There was, I'm so much more than my body. I'm so much more than my size. I'm so much more than what I eat in a day and what I don't eat in a day. I can be really good at a sport and look a little bit bigger, and that's okay. And it's still a very gradual thing, because I still have those thoughts where I can't post fitness videos because I'm jiggly now, and I still battle that.
What's your, when those thoughts come in, what's your kind of internal dialogue or self-talk?
So my self-talk is negative. It's a lot of old thoughts.
By default.
So I immediately go back to, you can't do that. You're too big now. You need to train again. And then the other voice goes, you need to train a lot. You need to get down to where you were, and then you can film videos.
So you literally have to, coming from both sides, it's both negative.
Angel and devil on my shoulders. Yeah. And that's not gone. So I'm not even going to sit here and pretend that I'm in this healed place. It's. I think for me, it's going to be almost a lifelong thing, because I'm someone who, I can wake up one day, I'm a very happy person, and my mood is pretty level. I'm not a moody person, but I would suffer with highs and lows in self-doubt. So if work is really good, I'm on top of the world, and I'm like, you know what, people can take me as I am. I'm curvy, I'm a badass bitch, and you know, other things are more important. I've got a good heart, and you know, whatever. And then there's other days where if I'm really low and insecure, I'm not doing enough, I'm not working hard enough, people think X, Y, and Z of me, and I need to get leaner and they'll like me. And that's literally as terrible as it sounds, it goes out the window about who I am as a person, and it goes right back down to what I look like.
What do you do when that self-doubt comes in? Do you like lock yourself in a room, talk to yourself? Do you hash it out with friends, you know, your partner? Do you turn to a book or a podcast that helps connect you back with yourself? What's your kind of process for dealing with that? Or do you just sit in it until it passes?
A little mixture of everything bar talking to friends. I think I'm quite private in real life, and I kind of keep my private life private, ironically, even though it looks like I'm super public. It can be speculative public knowledge, but it's not actually what I'm sharing. And my partner, for sure, because he's, I suppose, somebody who doesn't love me as I am. Yeah. He doesn't notice the pound difference at all. And I wouldn't say that's the first time, because, you know, I've obviously had exes, and it's the first time where I myself feel, you just love me as me. Yeah. Like, I am just loved as I am. It really is a mixture of aesthetic and my personality, and I feel a calmness with that. So that helps. But I feel it's very important to know that the partner can't do that for you. So it's not a reliance, it's a help. But, you know, it's just a little part. I would sit with my thoughts and I would remind myself, this does not define you. You remember you were unhappy when you were an 8. You've also been unhappy at a 16. So this is an internal struggle. This is your mind. Your mind is something that can go into right brain. And right brain is where I spend my time when I'm feeling low. And it's something that I like to observe. So I see the brain as, you've got your left-hand side, and it's your mathematics, your realist, your business brain. Your right side is your nervous system and your empathy and your emotions that can run riot. And I call it like the little anxious room. And if I go into that room for long enough, the left brain goes out the window and the observer needs to take place. So I observe my thoughts. I say, what are you doing there now, you loon? You're in right brain. Get out. Yeah. You're in there. You're spending too long in there. You know what happens. You can't change your size today. Your size doesn't matter. You've been smaller. It hasn't changed. And I just try and observe the thoughts. I don't fight them. I just let them happen. And I literally kind of sound like a mad one, but I internally talk about that.
Yeah.
And I observe it, I let it go. And then I potentially listen to something motivating. But instead of motivating in terms of fitness and watching a body, I listen to a brain. So I listen to a really amazing Audible book about someone who's experienced something negative in their life and overcome it, a business podcast, something that's going to inspire me as a person inside, because I feel like when we die, the body that I leave in the grave doesn't matter. It's lovely to look hot while you're alive. It's really important, but everyone's hot is different. Yeah. And so if you feel loved and you don't feel fear, you can be pretty happy in this life. So that's not a size.
Yeah, that's all work on your mindset, which is what I love. You mentioned positive audiobook there. Any book jump to mind when you think of ones that have positively impacted you?
Yeah, there's one with Oprah at the moment, and Eckhart Tolle. Incredible. I read her book as well. And I think that she's just someone who, I don't even see her as an aesthetic. I don't even see what she looks like. I hear and feel a warmth when I listen to her. I see someone who's just gone through quite a difficult life and has an unbelievable story. And it's people like that that remind me of what's important. I also love Fern Cotton. I think she's incredible. Yeah. She's a lot of mental health talk. And she's the other end aesthetically. She's string bean and beautiful and quirky and very different to what my style would be and everything. But I really appreciate the topics she covers and how another, you know, person that she could have on her podcast. I think she had Mel C on recently, and it was before the Spice Girls tour. And Mel C is known for being really regimented with her fitness and, you know, six pack kind of pretty much year long. She suffers with body dysmorphia. And it's kind of being aware that even at a perfect size in what I deem, you can still suffer with that.
Yeah.
So it's just to remind myself of, instead of comparing and peeving joy, it's relatability and listening to kind of people that inspire me to just feel like, oh God, I'm not so bad.
How do you work, because of obviously the field you work in, myself included, in the fitness space, it's beauty space, fitness space, they're all kind of aesthetic based. How do you work around that comparison? Because it's very easy to look at people in business, in makeup artistry space, in fitness space, etc., and compare yourself instantly. What do you have any strategies, tools, or tactics that you use to stop yourself comparing? Or, you know, what does it look like for you?
So we kind of touched on this a little bit before the podcast started, where I would be someone who I can digest social media content and I never feel hate towards it. I would never feel the need to comment something negative, and I don't feel a jealousy. I feel an internal insecurity sometimes when I feel like people are doing better than me, and a natural kind of comparison of I could be doing more. So it's definitely an internal thing where, again, I've got to get that observer out and think, look what you're doing. You know, you're looking at someone and not everything is as it seems, as we all know from social media. None of us are putting up our meltdowns. None of us are putting up when we binge or when we restrict. Very few people. I'm sure there are now, you know, kind of a lot of people don't use that side of their content to show the
highlight reel generally from 95%. Yeah.
And I think even when it's kind of the opposite of the highlight reel, it's a little bit curated still, because there's a purpose, there's an end goal. And you have to remember, when you're following people with a following, it is a business, it's a brand, and that human kind of amalgamates with that brand. So the same way you're BKF, you're also Brian. And so you've got to be very careful. It's the same with me and Makeup Fairy and Joanne. We are different beings and entities. And so equally, I have to remember who I'm watching is showing their brand entity and who they are in the darkest, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning meltdown, or their breakup, or the fact that they really struggle with X, Y, or Z. That's not what I'm seeing. And so it's context. It's putting into context, this is a snippet. I like the look of this snippet. I think I should try harder at this snippet. So I take from that, I want to be fueled. I don't feel jealousy. And so instead, with that insecurity, I use it to fuel me. And I think, well, I can do that, but I'm going to do it different. So it's kind of, I suppose, to give me the kick up the arse, really.
Yeah, it's your relationship with things like social media is so important. I love the you know, the old Japanese philosophy that we have three faces, you know, the one we show the world, the one we show our friends and family, and then the ones that we show ourselves and no one else gets to see. And I think understanding when you're following people on social media, me, you, anybody in the blogosphere, Instagram, social media in general, you're seeing one face, you know, and normally you're seeing the face the world sees, you know. Sometimes you know, that's why I love podcasts, because you see deeper than that, you know. You tend to get a little bit more.
You can't curate conversation. I don't believe. I think that when you're in person with someone with eye contact, and when you're talking about vulnerable issues, there's a flow. It's not scripted. And so, as you said, even when someone looks like they're showing their second face on social media, they still have to write that caption. They have to check it for typos. They probably have to send it to a brand for approval. And there's an awareness that needs to be had with the consumer. And I think we're all at fault. I think we as influencers, the brands, the consumers, we all need to have an awareness about that. It's not up to just the influencer. It's not up to the hashtag ad. It's not up to the discretion of the caption. You need to be aware as a consumer that ads have always existed. Human error exists, and also people make mistakes, but things can be twisted online. And we need to just be aware that it is a highlight or the opposite of a highlight reel, and just the negatives. And that doesn't define a person, that it's very much just a snippet. And we just need to have that awareness that when you're scrolling, make sure you're scrolling something positive. So that would be the first advice I'd give to somebody, is to make sure that you cull your feed so that you're watching inspirational, fantastic people where you actually don't feel those insecurities anymore. I did a cull a while ago, and I only watch stories where genuine, it's never going to happen. I'm not going to go home and sit, you know, on my own and go, oh, I feel like utter crap. Why did I watch that? So I control what I digest. And, you know, if it means muting someone so you don't offend them, that's fine. Like, yeah. I can be friends with someone and not like their content. Yeah. That's actually cool. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't think you're going to sit and watch beauty tutorials all day.
No, I watch a few of them.
I'm not offended by that. I mean, you didn't see my smoky eye. Yeah. But, like, you know, I expect for the research of this at least. But I feel like it's people get so sensitive about stuff. You know, if someone unfollows or whatever, you have to look after your own mental health. So you can do what's best for you. And I think reducing what you're digesting is the first step, because then it's a lot easier to observe your thoughts when you are kind of looking at something online. And sometimes you can get into a dark hole, like we all do it. All of a sudden you're at your, you know, someone's auntie's sister's dog page and you're like, how did I end up here? I have just wasted 15 minutes through scrolling and digesting things like that, and I don't know how I'm here. And that's minutes you could be spending either working on your own mind frame or doing the same yourself that you saw on that page. And so I think that everything is within reach, and everything should be an inspiration.
I love that. Like, I think, as I said, I mentioned earlier, the relationship with your platform is how people need to approach it, you know, and take ownership of it. You know, I have one of my anti-comparison strategies is I don't go on social media after a certain point in time, because it doesn't matter how secure you get. And I would consider myself relatively secure now, having came through dark places and worked out a lot of my own demons, similar to yourself. But I still get that comparison, particularly in the evenings when I'm tired, you know, and you're scrolling through and going, oh man, they look amazing, or they've got this, or they've got that. So it's like, okay, systems over willpower. Just don't go on your phone at that time.
Exactly.
Be aware that this is how you feel at this moment in time, and just protect yourself against that, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
you know?
I don't see it as a weakness. And actually, your exact comparison is what I would say to somebody with anxiety is write down your triggers. And when you notice it spikes, and avoid those scenarios. Now, within reason. So obviously it doesn't mean avoiding going somewhere that's giving you anxiety, because that's giving into the fear. But like that, if social media is giving you anxiety or bad feelings, you totally have the power to stop that. And I think it's fantastic to have a routine as well. Like, your job, like mine, is very much online, and you need to have a 9-to-5 somewhat. We don't, but if you're spending your personal time mindlessly scrolling when you're tired, you're susceptible to a lot. Like, that left brain is going asleep, and the right brain is active, and you're at that stage of like, I'm in my personal space now, I'm chilling, I'm looking at reality TV on my phone, and I'm making opinions and judgments, and I'm comparing. And it's just to remove it all together would be a great idea, because then you don't even have to fight it.
One of the things we talked about right before we went on air, and like, let's save this for the podcast, it was a really interesting point you made that I've actually never really thought of in the context of the way you gave it. And that's the way we consume social media in relation to reality TV. Can you expand a bit on just what we were talking about? Because I literally paused you as you were talking, like, save that. I'm like, I've never thought about it like that. Let's save that for the podcast. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I think there's a lot of value in that, to even see it from that perspective.
So I was basically saying that I feel like there's this term thrown around of just haters and trolls and negativity. It's just a little bit too loose. And if you look empathetically towards it, it's actually how we're conditioned. So over time, magazines were initially huge, and then it kind of became TV, and then it was a crossover, and then it was predominantly social media. And now it's a mixture of all, but I would say social media is king at the moment. And we were used to, say, opening up Hello magazine or seeing a cover of Closer. I don't buy magazines anymore, but that's what I remember. And it's something salacious. It's someone such and such is broken up with whatever, and apparently he cheated, quote. And then there is, you know, another reality TV star was seen after piling on the pounds on such and such a beach in press shot with cellulite showing. And then what that did immediately to the audience buying the magazine is, in my downtime, I want to feel really good about myself. And that magazine is doing just that. It's giving me a little fix. And I feel part of a world of consumers where I'm going, you look like shit, I'm not so bad. And you actually get a little kick from it. So it's the opposite of what social media is doing for people now. Because I think it sounds sadistic to say kick, but it's actually the natural psyche.
Yeah, the dopamine. You're literally getting a dopamine hit. Yeah.
Exactly. And now that then moved to TV, and reality TV became huge. There was Big Brother, and now there's the likes of Love Island. And we love watching breakups, fights. We love watching human error, you know, in kind of public forums. And then we take to social media to see how they're being bashed. You just see such and such happened on TV, and then they're being kind of berated online about it. And it's this continued hit of, they're just like me. She looks gorgeous, but she's a psycho. And there's always kind of like this balance of feeling good about yourself, but then feeling crap about being really mean. And I think that transferred to social media in a really highlighted manner, where we now scroll unconsciously, whether it's dating apps, Instagram, etc. And whether you're swiping left or scrolling up and down, it's become so unconscious that we are getting less and less dopamine hits. And we're seeking it more and more because the high was bigger when we first got it. And I see it as if you're on Tinder and you get a match, that feeling is like what we used to get from magazines and the cellulite. And then we got it from TV and the fights in relationships. And they're just like me. And, you know, John at home eating the takeaway isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And then it moved to social media. But because the hits are getting less for people, we're detaching. And that's isolating us into left brain with no emotion and no empathy. And we see people not quite as robots, but we're digesting them just like a character in a movie or someone on Carnation Street. So the same way something is scandalous for about a day and the next day it's, you know, in the chippy paper, that's the way we're looking at influencers, because influencers are like a mini version of celebrities. I hate that terminology, full stop.
Yeah.
I never planned to be an influencer. I planned to be a businesswoman. That was never part of my path. I accept it now because it's part of the world we live in, but I don't call myself that. I certainly don't call myself a celebrity. I'm a normal person with a really weird job. That's it. And but to compare it, I think we're digesting it in a similar way. And what that's doing to our psyche is it's so easy to leave hateful comments and have mean discussions in forums because it makes us feel good. We're seeking that big dopamine hit and we want to feel normal and we want to feel better than someone. And I say we as a blanket term because I don't personally do that myself, and I genuinely never have had the kind of need, but I do think there's a vast majority that just want to have, I don't want to say a cult. They want to have a family online that agrees with what they think.
Yeah, it's very tribal.
It's validation, and it's a tribal validation where you come together in packs, and packs are stronger than an isolated individual, and it's really easy to take someone down. And with that, there's something strange in people that feel good about that because it's an achievement. And I think it is primal. It's way back when.
Yeah.
It's hunting the animal. People call it witch hunts, but it is just that primal instinct of this is the end goal. Take it down, on to the next. And it's quite light because consumerism now, it's so constant. And we kind of digested ads very easily on TV. You didn't really notice the little asterisks at the end of a L'Oreal ad saying Cheryl Cole doesn't actually use this box dye. But when Joanne Larby doesn't use this box dye, it's big news because I'm just the girl next door. And I'm just doing a job that is a little bit weird that you're watching. And you have opinions the same way you review a TV show, and you're just reviewing me, essentially. And I think I hope I explained it the same way I kind of did earlier.
Yeah, I think it's the bringing conscious awareness to how you're reacting to anybody, you, me, your neighbor, friend. Like, I mean, you were very similar in the sense that I felt more of an inner insecurity when I see somebody doing better than me. Not so much now, it's something I've come to terms with that I always stay on top of, you know, as long as I can consciously be aware of it. But in the past, I would have brought back me and go, fuck, why aren't you doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, you should be doing that. You should be doing that job. You should be doing this or that. Where I didn't project and get on the keyboard and be like, who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. You know, I hate this. I hate what you're doing. But some people do. And if that's the way you react, it's, either way, mm-hmm. isn't that positive, because you can look at people like you doing what you're doing and be like, fuck, I'm motivated as like crazy. Mm-hmm. See, even I am, like, I'm so far from the makeup space, it's ridiculous. But seeing you, you know, set up the podcast and all, I'm like yes, get your message out. I'm like, provide value, serve people in that way, you know. You're that approach and that philosophy is learned, because that wasn't my default. Mm-hmm. My default was to see somebody, particularly like somebody in a similar position, you know, normally a guy that was fit, that was bigger than me or leaner than me. That's mm-hmm. generally who I would gravitate toward and be like, fuck, they're bigger than me, they're leaner than me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easier to knock them. You know, one of the quotes that Paul Dermody uses every time he comes on the podcast is, you know, blowing out somebody else's candle doesn't make yours burn mm-hmm. any brighter. And to be aware that you may be doing that because of the way you've been conditioned from magazines, from TV, from social media, it's just worth catching. And I wanted to mention it here
yeah.
because you were speaking on a whole, I've never thought about it like that, but I think it can provide a lot of value to people. So just thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, you do so many things. What are you most excited about at the minute? It may not even be a work thing, it probably is. But what are you most excited about at the minute?
it sounds strange to say that I'm excited about Calm, but genuinely in my personal life, the excitement comes from basic things. Being near the sea and getting to take my dog out and appreciating it. Genuinely having that time to myself where the brain is switched off. Anxiety is almost a distant memory. I can control it if it's there because it's going to be with me always. And I'm just absorbing nature and the little things that are in my life that I never really appreciated. The fact that I don't have to be part of a rat race, that I'm my own boss. Every single day, I thank my lucky stars for that because, you know, I've worked for people for years and I still work for people as such in terms of brands. But the ability to have that flexibility, I'm grateful for. So being excited about those tiny things in life that actually are huge, because when you don't have the appreciation for them, nothing is going to satisfy you. Nothing is going to be savored. Everything you do is the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So excited about life being good and stable and not dramatic and calm and just being in a really nice place. And then business-wise, definitely the podcast, purely because I feel as if my voice has been curated for long enough through my own doing and through what kind of platforms I was using. I never really fully get to show what I'm about. People will always speculate, is she sound? Is she not? They might meet me for a brief few moments and find me funny and then be shocked. And instead of people having just those snippets of guessing, I'd like them to actually know who I am and what I'm about and not to be controlled by anything. And sometimes, like, I'll do the odd interview and the media won't really put it out the way I said it. And you don't have that control. And podcast allows you have that control of conversation and to meet so many amazing people in business. I feel as if you're kind of, it's hard in my industry, and I'm sure yours, where there's crossover of people doing a lot of the same kind of things. Whereas podcasting is just so open. You learn from each other. Every conversation is different because you can't plan how it goes. So yeah, excited about both those things.
I love that. Like that, that's the beauty of the platform, the podcasting as a platform, because you said there's no hiding. Mm-hmm. It's literally like this would go out 100% unedited. Like this is exactly how the conversation went down.
Yeah.
That's something I struggle with traditional media. It's actually one of the reasons I stopped doing like radio spots and some TV stuff where you're like 3 minutes, like to get a point, you need to be on one side of the spectrum and have a strong opinion that I believe yes or no, if you're going to get a point across in 3 minutes. And the reality is most things are like, they're gray.
Most things in life are gray. They're not black and white. And I have felt that exact thing where I've had interviews go up and they've been in, I had one in my house last year for RTE and it was maybe 2.5 hours long. 2.5 minutes. And it's not the 2.5 minutes I would have picked. And people pick at that. And then you kind of have this, it grows legs and it's on such a minuscule. And that's such a prime example of what you can be perceived as online. It's that minute or those 2 minutes or the wrong part that's edited out. Or, you know, everyone wants to have a perception and people will have that no matter what. That's one thing that I've come to terms with as well, is you can't ever change that. It's a lovely quote by Gary Vee, and it's about timelines. And if you're doing something for yourself, you've all the time in the world. If you're doing it for other people, timelines right there, right in your face. And I think that with that, it's so true to everything. If you're doing it for other people, you'll always be disappointed because they're going to be disappointed in you. You're never going to meet everyone's ideals. You're never going to be everyone's cup of tea. You're not going to look like every guy wants to fancy. You're not going to sound like every girl wants to hear. And not reaching those nonsensical expectations gives a release, and with that is just being yourself and like it, lump it. I'm at a place where I don't care. A lot of people kind of ask about, you know, dealing with negativity and hate, and I've built a wall that can't be penetrated anymore. It bounces back, and so your thoughts are just none of my business. And so I suppose, as you said, the same way at the end of a day you monitor your social media time, I do that with media as well. You know, do I need to do this interview? Is it really going to serve me? Am I going to come out looking better for doing it? Probably not. And the podcast is like this amazing way of being like, I get to talk about it now. Yeah. And I get to say my thoughts. And I get to kind of, I suppose, let people in on what they maybe had no idea about.
Yeah, that's why I love it. And it's funny because, you know, I follow your social media platforms, you know, the Smokey Eye tutorial, my favorite. But, like I follow it passively, you know, I'm not a great consumer of social media in general.
Yeah.
I try and produce more on it. And, you know, if I ever heard any negativity, I'm like, you haven't met Joanne. Like, she's lovely. Like, you know, it's one of those things where somebody ever had it.
I'm paying
it. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. The check's in the mail. Yeah. But it's true. But you, that's the scene. And I get the same thing when people see a snippet of a 15-second Instagram story and they're like, the fuck are you saying that for? I'm like, hold on, it's a 15-second mm-hmm. video on something that I could speak probably an hour about.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's hard to defend that because it's actually pointless in a way.
Yeah.
Because you're defending the converted. They're already converted to their opinion, and that's cool. It's actually just being cool about it. It's being cool about, you think that, and that's all right. You want to let me know about it? Cool as well. I'm here for that. I'm not just here for the nice compliments and the positive, you know, comments. I love feedback, especially if it's constructive. I literally thrive on it.
Yeah.
If somebody listened to my podcast and was like, I wish you talked slower, you did. I love that. If it's really stupid and it's nothing to do with who I am, I don't even need to go there. Because yeah. it's I don't need to fight something that I already know. And that's where that wall has been built over time and through experience, like a big wave of negativity. I needed to build that wall and make it really, really strong. And then nothing can penetrate. And with that, you just, there's a lovely acceptance as well. Like, not everyone is going to like everything they digest. There are people that love to watch things they hate.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like car crash TV. And yeah. like, I could be that to people. And I'm sure I am. And I'm sure I'm someone's guilty pleasure on the loo and their lunch break in work. And yeah. then they talk about me in work to their friends, but it's not for the right reasons. It has nothing to do with me.
I think anybody that does that or does it with somebody else, one of the things I'll always say, I get asked a lot, no, I'll say a lot, definitely when I was competing, that guy is taking steroids, or that girl had a boob job, or this, or that, or the other, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm like, okay, cool, maybe they did, maybe they are. But how is that benefiting your life in any way? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, yeah, maybe they are. You know, as an individual fact, maybe they had a boob job, maybe they do take steroids, maybe they do this or that. Your life... Yeah, but like your life isn't moving forward in any way, and what you focus on is what expands. If you focus on what everybody else is mm-hmm. doing, don't be surprised when you're like, oh shit, I'm actually really unhappy with my relationship, with my fitness, with my health, with my job. You know, take full ownership of that, take extreme ownership of it, and then you can actually control it, and then you can change it if you decide that. And the last thing I want to cover before we sign off, because this is awesome, and like we'll definitely do a round two mm-hmm. at some stage, the wall you mentioned. Mm-hmm. About building a wall around yourself. I know there's a lot of people, myself included, you know, particularly a past self, where building that wall seems like such an amazing idea, but I wouldn't know where to start. And there's a lot of people who are similar. They're like, I would love that, not be able to be penetrated by other people's opinions, or, you know, particularly the negative stuff. Mm-hmm. Constructive criticism is a good thing. How did you go about building that wall? What was the process like, and how do you stay on top of it every day? Because that wall falls mm-hmm. if you don't stay on top of it. So what does that
mean? Yeah, it's constant work. And I think that it's something that absolutely can crumble a little bit when you're down or you're knackered. Like, we're all just human. It's not this like completely ridiculously built wall that's never going to be touched. There's obviously things that affect all of us as human beings, and it'll probably crumble again. I could build it back up, and it is a process, but it's accepting that, number one, that you're not setting yourself up for failure by expecting to be so bloody resilient. Nothing will ever harm you, because that's ridiculous. And expectations bring sadness. I fully believe. I think if you expect nothing from people and things, and you do everything in terms of action and affirmation, you're sorted. So accepting that and grounding yourself. And one thing that I like to do, and it's very much a mindful trait, is just looking at your feet on the ground. You are safe. You are alive. You are healthy. You are fine. And that reminder of those feet, it kind of diminishes everything in that moment. It's small, and those little thoughts come back again, and they're negative, and it's very difficult to get rid of them. But that grounding moment is, right now in my life, am I happy? Okay, I'm not. What do I need to change? Is my relationship healthy and good? No, you need to break. Simple as, like, there's no in between. It's like, cut to the chase. Have I got issues with my family? How can I solve that? Do I need a conversation with someone, or am I going to just resign to the fact that we don't talk? Okay, resolved, done. Is there issues in my friendship? Is there issues in my diet? Is bad food making me feel bad because I look bad? And is that a domino effect? Am I totally happy with eating pizza and being a little bit fluffier? And I love it. And that's amazing. Great. You know, whatever area and element of your feet on the floor life isn't good, you need to address that. And just the way you write a list of things that you need to do in your house in terms of chores or things for work every day, you need to do life admin. And it's not things like going to the post office. It's things like, is my mental health in check? Am I happy with my feet on the floor? Am I in a good relationship with myself? And when you kind of work on that, that wall is building already, because you're thinking, yeah, I am happy in those things. So what they say doesn't matter, because I'm happy. Am I hurting somebody? No. Am I doing anything wrong? No. Is what they say true? No. So if you know that honesty and you have that kind of inner integrity and belief in yourself, then it should bounce off. And it is just practice. And it's practice that comes through experiencing negative emotions in life and through having hard things happen, but it wouldn't change any of that for the world, because I know I can help people with that. And I know that with that, part of the podcast is to use what I've learned to genuinely listen and help, not as a professional, as just a normal gal that's there to say it was shit for me and the world saw it. So if it's shit for you and no one's seeing it, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And you know, you can be picked apart, and there's a lot of suicide on social media. There's a lot of really, really negative shit going on in the world, and there always will be. And I fear it's only going to get worse. I would love for schools to integrate into the education system how to deal with social media, for starters, about ads, about people photoshopping, irony, about the negative effects it can have on it if we consume it too often, and if you don't have human interaction of meeting people in person, only online, and kind of educate people on that so that we're more equipped for what's to come. And then we're all building that wall together, because we're having an awareness as opposed to trying to fight it individually. Because if you have a load of people with crumbling walls, we're only going to hurt each other. So it's going to be harder to build back up. So it is a community thing. And I think it's about just being kind, really basic things, just being nice to somebody. Like I get people that message me sometimes and say, I feel really bad, but I unfollowed you and I heard some things online, but I actually love your content. So I kept on coming on, and I found myself wondering why I wouldn't give you the follow. And now I'm back and I'm so glad. And I'm like, that's lovely. No need to be sorry. Yeah. No need to even tell me that. Be at peace with yourself. You did that. That was your choice. Cool. You're back. Welcome.
Yeah.
There's no grudges. There's just an understanding, and it's just kindness.
I love it. There's literally nothing better that we could end on. Joanne, this is amazing. There's so much value here. You know, your bulletproof mindset is what I think when I think of you, and using life struggles, life's failures to build that wall. And I think people listening will get so much value from that. Before we go, tell everybody where's the best place they can go give you that follow, where the podcast, where they can listen to that, and the website, and everywhere else that you spend your time socially or online.
Okay, so perfect. Website is joannelarby.com. Podcast is the other side of perfect.com. On there, you'll find me on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, pretty much everywhere. And you can ask Alexa to play my voice if you want to when you're doing the housework. And then on social media, it's at MakeFairyPro. Pretty much on there every day. So you'll see Instagram stories, IGTV, but massive focus on the podcast.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link all of those in the show notes on briankeyfitness.com, and definitely go check out the podcast and go check out my episode on the podcast, and hopefully enjoy it. And Joanne, thank you so much again. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for all the value provided today.
Thanks for having me.
There we have it. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed recording it. Joanne is just one of these people who I get something from every single conversation we have, because she's always striving to become better. She's always striving to learn from her mistakes. And she's just, when you speak to her, there's a, in these long form conversations, which I'm aware don't always come across on social media, but that's why podcasting and her new podcast, The Other Side of Perfect, I think is going to be such a huge success, because of her ability to articulate her thoughts and her self-awareness on where she needs to improve and how she's done it in the past, and using that as a message to help people do the same. Absolutely love it. So if you enjoyed this one as much as I enjoyed it, be sure to tag me and Joanne on your Instagram story. And if you enjoyed it, check out my episode on her podcast, The Other Side of Perfect. We recorded them on the same day. So there's like an ebb and flow. It's kind of like a part one or a part two, depending on how you look at it. So I'll link that in the show notes as well, and go check that out. And I hope you all enjoyed. Get you all next week.